everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I'm going to be talking about Baby Teeth. It's a series from writer Donnie Cates with art by Gary Brown, and the colors are by Mark Englert. And it's from Aftershock Comics, obviously, Aftershock Monday. And I remember when I first heard about this title, I have to be honest, I wasn't really excited. Well, I kind of had mixed feelings, right? Because Donnie Cates is a really hot name in comics and, you know, pretty good writer. There's been a lot of other ideas and stories he's written that I've enjoyed. But when I heard you hear the title Baby Teeth and you're like, wait, what the heck could that possibly be about? And then when I read the first solicit, I'm like, oh, a 16-year-old woman or girl is pregnant with the Antichrist. You know, I'm done. I'm out. not really that interested, right? And, you know, that's just a personal preference for me. I was raised Catholic and went to Catholic school for 9 years. And so any religion... any title that's going to have religion as a central theme, a big part of the story, it just doesn't appeal to me. It's like I read comics to kind of escape from that stuff, so wasn't really excited to read it. That being said, I think around the time issue 2 came out, I was hearing really good things, and I was like, well, it's Aftershock, it's Donnie Cates. I gotta at least check it out, right? I gotta at least see what it's all about. So I read the first two issues and I thought, that's okay. It's not terrible. It's better than I expected because the religion's not like super overt and pushed in your face. And then by the time issue 3 came out, I was like, well, okay, this is getting good. It's starting to hook me. And yeah, by 4, I'm like, okay, I'm there. Really good story. And 10 comes out this Wednesday. It's part of the reason I'm talking about it. So April 25th, 10 will be in comic stores. And what I find interesting is that as the new issues come out, I find myself going back and reading from the beginning each time. Because there's so much there, there's so much depth, and it's a really strong read. You know, now that it's up to issue 10, and I did another reread, I read issues 1 through 9 and then read 10. I don't know if I'll do that when 11 comes out, because it kind of feels like with 10, the story's kind of shifted gears, so to speak. And I think that the whole narrative's going to jump a little bit, take a little bit of a time jump. So I don't necessarily think I'm going to need to go back, or I don't know if that I'll get as much out of going back as I did before. So I know when you hear the premise, immediately what a lot of people are going to think of is Rosemary's Baby, right? That really famous movie from the 60s with, was it Mia Farrow that played the young woman who was carrying the Antichrist? I think it was. And, you know, I'm going to have to look that up because otherwise it's going to bug me. I was kind of worried about just, again, having it be a lot of religion and preachy and all that. But it wasn't that. Let's see, Rosemary's Baby film, 1968. And, yeah, Mia Farrow. So, let me just give I'm going to give real quick rundowns of the issues just to kind of give you an idea of the story. So, it opens up, we meet Sadie Ritter. She's the 16-year-old who has given birth to this child, who is the last son or the Antichrist or they have a lot of different titles for him. But when we meet her, she's actually in some ruins in Palestine. and she's recording on a cell phone a video for her son. So right away, we know she's been separated from her son, and she seems to be kind of sad, and she's trying to tell her son what's going on. She doesn't know if she'll ever see him again. And so it's an interesting narrative choice that Kate chooses to as a framework for the first like 11 issues or so. And if I get a chance to talk to him, I'm going to ask him about what went into that decision, because he could have just, you know, he could have just showed the story as it played out. But I don't know if that had to do with him wanting the ability to add more exposition in there as a framework. So, but anyway, in the first issue, Sadie, she's minding her own business. She's able to hide her pregnancy for the most part because she's not a very popular kid in school. She wears a lot of layers, and you know, nobody really pays her that much attention. And we meet her sister, Heather Ritter, in the first story as well, who is older and very much kind of a badass. She doesn't take crap from anybody. And through the series, we come to know Heather as a, kind of a no-nonsense protector of not just Sadie and the boy, the Antichrist Clark, but also her, just her family in general. But in a way, Heather's a little bit of a tragic character because she seems broken in a way. She doesn't seem to interact with other people on a social level very well, even to the point where Sadie says during the story that she doesn't feel like Heather's a very good person. She's a great sister and a great aunt, but she's not a very good person. And I think, again, that goes back to the fact that she doesn't have feelings. And I don't know if this has to do with the way Heather was conceived, or if there's something else in her past that we're not privy to yet at this point that kind of made her the way that she is. But she basically tells Sadie at one point that – actually, Sadie tells her that she thinks that she's really brave, and Heather responds, no, she's not brave, because being brave is overcoming fear, and in order to feel fear, you have to have the ability to feel anything at all. So we kind of get the idea that Heather doesn't have feelings, right? At least not the way regular people do. And for those of you psychology majors out there, you'll know that that's a definition of a sociopath. So Heather's definitely not somebody you want to mess with. So right there in the first issue early on, Heather meets up with Sadie, takes her to the hospital. As she goes into labor, basically every time she has a contraction, it causes an earthquake. And so it's a pretty intense process, but eventually Clark is born. And again, you know, I'm kind of glossing over the details. I want you to be able to read it for yourself. But that's the way the first issue ends, basically, is the baby is born. Heather brings their father, who they refer to as the captain. He's an airline pilot, former Marine. His real name is actually Mike. But Sadie has managed to hide her pregnancy from him as well all this time. And he shows up at the hospital, and they're basically, you know, one big happy family at that point. Although, obviously not, because regardless of whether Sadie and Heather want to acknowledge it, this wasn't a regular birth, and they both know it, although they don't really seem to talk about it. So that's the way the first issue ends. Issue two has to do with kind of the early days. Sadie takes Clark home, and, you know, like any first-time mother, she has her struggles, her trials and her tribulations, tried to get him fed, you know, making mistakes. And it's tough. It's tough for her. You know, she's very young. And although Clark was feeding early on and latching on, now that has stopped. So she's really tired. Her dad, the captain, offers to watch him for a little while so she can get some sleep. And later, although it appears that the captain's able to get Clark to eat, he spits it all up. And Sadie tries again and is successful, but not in the way that you probably think. But in the meantime, we meet some men who were kind of behind the one of the conspiracies, one of the behind the scenes forces that are interested in Clark. They're known as the Silhouette. We don't really know a whole lot about them at this point, other than they're some kind of, as Sadie describes them, Illuminati or whatever, like a super well-funded and creepy evil watchers council. So basically, these people keep an eye on seismic events and other signs that portend the coming of these sons of Lucifer, however you want to put it, sons of the devil, and they take care of them, so to speak. So they make their decision that somebody, an assassin, needs to be brought in to take care of this new child who they believe will bring about the end times. And they travel out to the desert where a father and daughter live. The father is known as the Coyote. The daughter is known as the Prairie Wolf. They're both assassins. They've both worked for the Silhouette, as that group is called before. But the Coyote is retired, and when he sees the helicopter show up, he's like, get out of here. Not doing it. I'm retired. And they're like, hold on, dude. We're actually here for the Prairie Wolf. And he's like, oh, why don't you say so? And she goes off to perform her duty. Meanwhile, as I mentioned, back at the Ritter household, Clark has spit up all his food, and Sadie manages to get him to latch on again. And as she's feeding, she's like, ow, hey, and pulls Clark away, and he has blood all over his mouth and little retractable teeth. He's literally drinking her blood rather than her milk. So that's the way issue 2 ends. Quite ominous there. Issue 3 picks up right where that left off, with Sadie telling Heather, a few weeks have gone by, right? And she's like, okay, listen, I know this is crazy, but you were there with me in the car when the birth happened. You saw the earthquakes. You saw, you know, all this crazy stuff. I'm not crazy, am I? And Heather's like, well, if you're crazy, I'm crazy too, because you're right. I did see all that stuff. So I believe you when you tell me that Clark needs to drink blood. Like, I mean, what? They just kind of accept it. I mean, what else are you going to do? I mean, they're literally faced with the reality of that. So they talk it out, and just based on how fast Clark is growing and how much, you know, sustenance a baby needs, Sadie's worried that she's just not going to be able to provide enough blood. And so Heather offers to supplement. That doesn't exactly go the way it's supposed to. When he is subjected to Heather's blood, he just freaks out. And he has this huge wail that we've seen a few times. The coloring all on the pages all turns red and orange. And we find out later on that one of Clark's powers is through this wail, this call, he's able to open a portal to what's called the Red Realm, I guess in reference to hell. And that's exactly what happens here. And through that portal comes a little mutant raccoon looking demon creature with horns and a forked tail. So we'll see more from him later. Meanwhile, in order to get Clark to stop with the tremendous yelling, Heather gives him a pacifier dipped in Jack Daniels, of all things. And so the sisters are like, you know, they kind of, in that moment, in the heat of the moment, they'd kind of yell at each other. And now they kind of make up. They're like, sorry, you know, it's just, it's a tough situation, but what are we going to do? We still need blood. And they theorize that maybe it has to be from a parent. And so Sadie admits that Kevin Turner, who's a boy that used to torture her at school, basically is the father. I have my doubts on whether this is actually true or not, but it's what Sadie says. Heather is like, yeah, I'm going to go look for him right now. He's going to give us blood so that we can feed Clark, basically. And Heather gets in her car and takes off, leaves Sadie there on her own. And when Heather manages to track down Kevin, who's hiding out on a boat, trying to let the whole I'm a teenage father thing blow over, Heather finds him and he's not exactly in any condition to help or give any blood. So And I'll leave it at that. And that's the way that issue three ends. So issue four, we see that Sadie is bottling up a bunch of blood, and her dad shows up and he's like, "What are you doing?" And she explains to him about the earthquakes, about the blood. And her dad's just like, "No, this isn't real. You're hurting yourself. We need to take you and Clark to the hospital." And Sadie's like, "No, you're not taking him anywhere." And she's just completely overwhelmed, and she passes out from the stress of the situation and the blood loss. And so the captain tries to call Heather. Heather sees the call coming in on her phone and is like, "Sorry, Dad, can't help, busy with Kevin right now," and ignores the call. She's not really sure what to do. She's on this boat, and it's not a good place to be because the police have just showed up, and she definitely doesn't want to be caught there in a compromising situation. So she's trying to figure out what to do. And as she's standing there, somebody sneaks up behind her, grabs her, and takes her off the boat into the water. Meanwhile, we see the assassin has shown up at the Ritter household, and there's a bit of a fight, but Mike, with the Marine skills, actually manages to overpower the assassin, and Sadie runs away with Clark. And as it's kind of like a Mexican standoff, that's where issue five starts. So just when it looks like Mike may have to shoot the assassin, Heather comes barreling through the wall of the house and knocks out the assassin, like really jacks her up pretty badly. And we meet the gentleman who saved her from the compromising position on the boat. His name is Dancy. And he starts giving information to them about Clark being the target of this assassin. The assassin's in the employ of an ancient organization called the Silhouette. They believe the boy is evil. He's going to bring about end days. And, you know, I met Heather earlier tonight, and I helped her out, and I've been filling her in on how I can help on the drive over here. And so he actually goes and heals the assassin because he says that if she doesn't show back up, the Silhouette will just keep sending assassins after them. And so he convinces her through some kind of hypnosis that she completed her mission and sends her on her way to go report back to the Silhouette. Then he tells Sadie, Heather, and Mike that they all need to come with him along with Clark because they and the Dancy and his organization called The Way have a castle that awaits Clark because he's the king and Dancy's been assigned as the bodyguard. He's there to take them all to safety. And meanwhile, we see the assassin, Prairie Wolf, doesn't make it back to Silhouette to report back because she's attacked by the mutant raccoon thing, demon Marty, as we later learn. All right, so issue six, and I know, again, I'm glossing over these really fast. I want you to read them for yourself, but I just want to give you kind of an overall idea of the story. So the next issue, issue six, picks up. They're on the plane. They're traveling to Maine, where the Way has their castle and their headquarters for Clark. And Heather and Sadie see the little raccoon, mutant raccoon demon monster on the plane, and they make wing. Actually, they make reference to the famous Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner. And because of that, they kind of freak out a little bit. It wakes up Clark. He starts doing that crazy scream again, which causes nosebleeds, and people are freaking out on the plane. And Dancy uses his powers, he is a warlock after all, to put Clark to sleep. And Sadie realizes at that point that what they're really doing is crazy. They barely know this guy, and they agreed to travel all the way across country with him and Clark, because Dancy has promised that they have an answer to Sadie's feeding issues, not having enough blood. But really, Sadie's like, you brainwashed the assassin. You just put Clark to sleep by touching him. Did he do something to us, mess with Heather and the captain and my mind, that got us to go along so easily? And she suspects that that may indeed be the case. So when they get to the castle, they talk about how it looks like a dump, but that's just to keep visitors away, to make it look like it's not, a very nice place, basically. It looks like a junkyard almost. But actually, when they get inside and go underneath, it's a complete underground city, and they're told that they're not going to leave. And this is where the tension starts ratcheting up. The mom of the Ritter family, Christine, is there. She had left years ago. She left Mike and her two daughters. She's actually the mayor of this town. And again, this is where the story starts to take a turn. So with Seven, we start learning about a lot more of what's going on in the past and what the silhouette is about, what the way is about, what really the story is all about. We learn that there was one other female who managed to give birth to a chosen son. And when the silhouette went after them, she actually pricked her own baby, and he woke up and started his terrible scream, and they escaped into the Red Realm. And the coyote was there when that actually happened. So in Seven, we see the coyote is being informed that his daughter was killed, and he's standing in front of the silhouette, and he's lost it. He's like, okay, the silhouette powers that be are telling him, okay, we're going to tell you who killed your daughter so you can go out and get your revenge. And he says, I know exactly who killed my daughter. It was you guys. And he takes him out. So he's got his own agenda, and he basically tells the silhouette powers that be that he's going to go and rescue Sadie and her family and put them somewhere where they can't be touched anymore and they can try to live their life in peace. Meanwhile, the family of Mike and Heather and Sadie and Clark are learning that they're really prisoners of this Way organization. Much like Silhouette, it's an ancient organization, and their goal is to bring about the end times through the raising of one of these chosen children. And they believe that everything is part of God's plan. God is infallible, and he created Lucifer, and the reason he created Lucifer was so Lucifer, through his bloodline, would create the end times. And we learn that Christine, and through Christine, Sadie, and through Sadie, Clark, are all descended from the very first sacrificial nun that was a sacrifice to Lucifer thousands and thousands of years ago. And rather than having her burn when they sacrificed her, Satan or Lucifer impregnated her through immaculate conception, and that bloodline was destined to bring about the end times. So we get part of that story in Seven, part of it in Eight. And Sadie's like, wait, what? So we're descended from a devil baby? And Christine's like, yeah, that's kind of the case. And so she explains how all the women of that bloodline were always trying to get pregnant and give birth to a son, because then maybe they would have the chance to be that son would have a chance to be the chosen one. We also learned that Dancy is actually Heather and Sadie's half-brother, also a son of Christine through some less than ideal means, apparently, which is why he's so jacked up and he has powers of a warlock, but he's not all there exactly, because as her biological clock was ticking, she took some risks. It doesn't say exactly what it was, and was able to give birth to a son, but clearly he wasn't the chosen one. And Dancy's trying to keep Mike and Heather satiated and placated and just have them chill out in this little house in this underground city, and they're not having it. They're like, nope, we're going to find Sadie and Clark. And he's like, you guys just don't get it, do you? Sadie and her child are never going to leave here alive, right? And neither will you. In fact, the only reason you guys are alive is as a courtesy to Christine and nothing more. We only need Sadie and the child. And they're going to stay here, and the child's going to be raised in this environment, and that's it. End of story. And as he's telling him this, he sees the look on Heather and Mike's face. He's like, wait, what are you looking at? And turns around, and there's that crazy pink and purple mutant raccoon-looking thing. And he says, well, that is a baby Tanuki demon. How utterly odd. And he knows that it's from the Red Realm. And as he's checking it out and asking if it can talk yet, it basically fries him right there, like hellfire, and burns him to a crisp, and then barfs up a collar that says Marty. And so they start calling it Marty. Meanwhile, we see Christine has drugged Sadie after telling her basically her and her family's lineage, takes Clark for herself and says, don't worry, Clark, mommy's here. So, not good. You can see Christine definitely has ulterior motives. She basically wants to raise Clark as her own and cut Sadie out of the picture as well. Interesting thing about Dancy, he wasn't actually killed by the raccoon monster. His body starts to regenerate, I'm sure through his powers of the warlock. And so that's where issue 8 ends. Issue 9, we see that they've put Clark in a more secure location in the underground city called the Manger. And Christine is trying to bond with him. And while she's doing that, the base comes under attack. And it's the coyote he's there to rescue, as he told the silhouette, there to rescue Sadie and Mike and Clark and get them to safety. So 9 is nothing but a big giant battle with Heather and Sadie and Mike trying to free Clark, and the coyote basically trying to burn everything down. And Dancy still regenerating, talking to his mom, Christine, wants to kill Sadie, wants to kill Mike. And Christine won't let that happen. She says, well, if something happens to Clark, we need Sadie because she's one of only two women who's been able to give birth to one of these chosen sons. So we need to keep her alive. And Dancy's like, okay, I buy that. But why do we need to keep Mike alive? And Christine, obviously she still has feelings for him because she won't answer. And she's like, I don't answer to you. And he's like, well, what about Heather? She's a complete psychopath. And Christine's like, on that we agree. Yeah, we can wipe out Heather. So the powers that be in the way decide to kill Heather, but they allow her to say goodbye to Clark. And when she goes to say goodbye, she wakes him up so that he starts with his crazy wail again. And that's where issue 9 ends. I'm not going to spoil a lot about issue 10. What I will say is that screaming does allow Heather to extricate herself from the sticky situation she was in, about to die. And we also get a resolution on the coyote being able to rescue the Ritter family. And it really sets up, as I said in the beginning of the podcast, a real change going forward. And it kind of is the end of that framing technique that I was speaking about earlier, with Sadie recording a video message to Clark on a cell phone. So with issue 12, it's going to be, or 11 rather, I think it's going to be kind of a whole new ballgame, so to speak. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you look at the first 10 issues, you know, first 5 are kind of laying the groundwork and we're meeting the characters. 6 through 10 are all about the way and learning more on the backstory and the reason these things are happening. And so with 11, I think we're going to see a big shift and may even be a time jump, as I said, going forward. So it definitely feels – 10 definitely feels like the ending of part of the story. And I imagine 11 will feel like a new chapter going forward. So as I said, I didn't expect it to like it as much as I do. It's a very compelling story. The art by co-creator Gary Brown is interesting. It's It's not my favorite style of art. It's not very clean. It's got a very sketchy quality to it. But he definitely gives a sense of menace and foreboding on the page. And I think that Mark Englert does a great job with colors, especially, you know, I mentioned when Clark is screaming how the whole panels are almost monochromatic. You know, they're almost all, everything is in a shade of red. So that works very well also. And there's a surprising number of splash pages in these issues, and that's not, or a lot of larger panels too, and that's not really typical of a book like this that's not real heavy on the action. I mean, there are certain issues, like when the assassin showed up, and issue 9 when Coyote shows up to attack the Way compound. I mean, those issues are almost all action from start to finish. But the majority of the other issues are, it's a lot of talking heads. And so that can get old and boring really quickly. But what I love about Gary Brown's art is it doesn't feel that way at all, because he's constantly shifting this perspective. He's constantly moving your eye around the page. And he does a great job of zooming in sometimes, again, just to provide variation. And plus he draws a really cool looking mutant raccoon, like I said. So kudos on the art. Kudos on the coloring by Mark Englert. The monochromatic is a trick I really like. I love that he really has given Clark himself very much his own kind of color palette. Like it's always like these muted blues and greens when Clark's on the page. So I find that to be interesting as well. So I certainly recommend Baby Teeth. I know volume 1 is out there. I'd say it's definitely worth picking up. And I don't hear a lot of people talking about this title, and it's surprising to me because Donnie Cates is such a popular writer. You know, I hear a lot of people talking about his Thanos run over at Marvel right now. It's getting, you know, multiple printings. I hear people talking about Redneck over at Image, but I don't hear a lot of people talking about this, and I'm not sure why it is. Maybe people aren't aware of it, or not enough people are reading it. I'm not sure, but as I said, I certainly recommend it. It's a really great story. I'm not sure if it's going to be a finite series or not. I kind of have a feeling that it is. I kind of have a feeling that Donnie Cates has an idea of the way the story ends. So maybe we'll have him on the show at some point to talk about it. But I certainly recommend it. It's one of Aftershock's better titles, but probably for me, definitely in their top 5. Maybe top 3. I don't know. I'd have to sit down and look at some of their other titles. I mean, Replica is still my all-time favorite title, but that's not coming out anymore. So of the current titles that are coming out, yeah, it's one I have to read right away. And that, for me, that says it all. I have so many books I have to read just to cover things on the podcast that I don't always get to read what I want to read, or I don't always get to read what I want to read when I want to read it. You know, I read everything I want to read eventually, but sometimes other books have to take priority. But that's not the case with this one. I always make time to read Baby Teeth as soon as I can. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining me. Please go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all our other coverage on pop culture, movies, TV shows, and all that kind of good stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three places are great spots to find out when we release new episodes and also check out all our convention coverage. So once again, thanks for joining me, everybody, and I'll talk to you next time.